A very warm welcome to this latest episode of the Club Soda podcast. My name's Harriet Whaley-Cohen and I'm your guest host today. And I have not had a drink since the 1st of October 2002, which is over 18 and a half years, another lifetime ago. And I'm joined today by two fabulous friends and colleagues of mine, Ian Young, who helped me in my early days of sobriety and has been a close mate ever since, and the fabulous Jamie Lee Grace, who's a champion in her own way as well in the sober field. So who am I? Well, actually, I've been linking up with Club Soda and helping them empower their members, people just like you, ever since the launch of Club Soda, hosting workshops such as how to be happier and healthier and have everything be more once you've given up drinking, rather than it feel like it's going to be less, and have done all sorts of things with Club Soda over the last 5-6 years. Separately to that, I'm a women's leadership and empowerment coach and speaker, changing the way that women think, act and feel in their relationship with themselves, their bodies and their potential massively for the better through my public speaking workshops, my coaching programs and products and those sorts of things. So that's a little bit about me. I'd love to hand over to each of you, my lovely guests, to introduce yourselves as well. So ladies first, Janie, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, thank you. It's lovely to be here. I have not as many years as you, but 3.5 years just about now since I stopped drinking, which is sometimes I can't believe it. I was having a conversation with someone the other day who said, I'm finally getting it. It's not that I can't have a drink. I don't want to drink. I thought, wow, yeah. If you'd said that to me 4 years ago, I just could not have believed that that could be possible. So yes, I quit drinking 3.5 years ago. I took a long time to kind of be brave enough to come out. But then when I did, I thought, wow, may as well just share this with everybody. So I did a TEDx talk called Sobriety Rocks, Who Knew, in 2019. And I host a platform called The Sober Club, which is also a membership site where we focus really on, well, everything is the what's next for me is the thing I'm always really passionate about. The, you know, how do you kind of make the decision to stop drinking? How do you get through those early stages with as much ease as possible? And then how do you focus on, you know, the holistic picture, the health and well-being? And my book's just come out as well. Happy, Healthy, Sober, Ditch the Booze and Take Control of Your Life. Yeah, I know. It's great. It's really tough bringing out a book in lockdown because normally I would be doing a lot of events. But yeah, it's great because it's not just me. There's loads of other experts in the book. So almost whatever your area of interest when it relates to sort of health and well-being in any way is probably in there.
Brilliant. That sounds like a really important resource for people on their newly sober journey, and actually probably for people even further on as well. I'm sure there's lots in there. Oh, welcome, Jamie. And I'm also now going to welcome the fabulous Ian Young, who's in Thailand, where he now lives. Ian, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hello, everybody. My name is Ian. I'm Harriet's friend. No, I was around when Harriet was getting sober, and that's when we first met. And I had a few more months than she did, and we just became very close. So I'm in my 21st year of sobriety, which absolutely amazes me. I was in active addiction for 13 to 16 years, depending on how you look at my behavior at school. I was an intravenous drug user, a homeless statistic or non-statistic, and a chronic alcoholic. And I got sober, fortunately, at the age of 29, and literally changed my life, changed my whole direction, and went off and had some success building some rehabs in the UK, then built a private practice that took me around the world, helping fairly affluent families with problematic sons, daughters, husbands, wives, parents, and designed kind of sober companion models around Europe and particularly London, and was, I guess, best known as an interventionist, where I'd go in and create willingness in people who weren't necessarily happy about stopping. So that was kind of my key skill. And then I've been busy. A few years ago, 3.5 years ago, I moved to Thailand. And I actually have a rehab down here in Phuket, which I'm very proud of. But I then 9 months ago, moved to Koh Phangan, which is a kind of counterculture hippie island, and had a massive or significantly sized further spiritual experience, largely exaggerated through ecstatic dancing, which is kind of like going to parties absolutely sober and dancing. That's just taken me in a whole new kind of realm where I almost feel like I've gone back to my days of being an anarchistic punk back in the late 80s, early 90s. But yet here I am approaching 50, yikes. And now I have a private practice on this island as well, doing addiction consultancy up here. And do you know what? I think above all and beyond all of that, I'm happier now than I've ever been in any other part of my life. And I like what Janie just said, her friend said, it's been a long time since I've missed drinking. I get to choose on a daily basis to enjoy life sober without, you know, rose tinting what's going on around me. Life's beautiful. I'm happy.
Well, Ian, that's so lovely to hear. And certainly from all your pictures that I see, you do look incredibly content, happy, suntanned. all those lovely beach pictures. It's gorgeous to have you here. Thanks for joining. So our topic today is all about becoming more empowered or empowered at all once you've stopped drinking. And I thought it would be useful to start with breaking down, well, what does it actually mean to be empowered? And I guess the word power is the key bit there. And actually, when you go back and look at the etymology, the root meaning of the word power, it doesn't mean to be able to dominate something. It just means to be able to do something. So power is just about being able to do stuff. And I think there's just vast amounts that I could not do back in the old drinking and party days, or the miserable last few years as well, of my drinking and drug taking. And there's so much that I can do now, just so much. And when I think back to how disempowered, or the lack of power, the lack of ability to do stuff that I had, it was quite terrifying. In fact, the further I get away from it, the more I'm amazed that I'm alive, quite frankly. I just couldn't feed myself, didn't wash my hair for a few months at one point, couldn't show up for anything, couldn't manage my money, couldn't do anything. I was not a productive member of society, and I certainly couldn't take care of myself. There was just a total lack of adulting, actually, and a real lack of happiness and joy. It was all pretty damn miserable. And I don't think that's what life is all about. What were each of your experiences with the disempowerment that drinking brought along with it?
Shall I jump in first? I mean, I think, I mean, I didn't ever have a rock bottom moment. You know, I don't think everyone does, of course. And, you know, so I was, you know, that the typical grey area drinker, as we now know the term to be. You know, I wasn't at rock bottom. I was functioning perfectly well. I was even, you know, relatively healthy because of all the other stuff I did. I was kind of queen of natural health. So I'm grateful for that, because it probably sort of saved me, really. So nobody knew that there were any issues at all. I didn't ever miss a day off work. Nobody knew I had a problem, in inverted commas. But I knew, because I was waking up at 3 a.m. absolutely hating myself. And although nobody else would have noticed, for me, you know, this whole concept of empowerment is really interesting, because when I look back, I realize that although I was, in inverted commas, functioning, and I was, you know, a fairly energetic person, and I was doing loads of stuff, actually what was going on within was I was becoming smaller and smaller. My world was kind of imploding. It was lots of little things. It was nothing massive. It was just that I was becoming really fearful and really anxious about stuff that had never worried me before. It was my sense of guilt over what messages I was sending to my kids, particularly, you know, teenagers. It was the lack of authenticity. You know, someone who was, as I say, queen of natural health. I've been writing books on holistic health. Yeah. For years, you know, that's my thing. And also, you know, not just that, I'm a Hay House author, and I was interviewing every guru there was on meditation and self-care and self-love.
So you had a lot of information, didn't you?
Exactly. I mean, there was nothing that I didn't know about self-love, self-care, about empowerment. Yeah. And yet actually it wasn't true for me. So there was a real, real kind of sense of the elephant in the room the whole time. And that went on for years. And it's only, you know, now that it's removed, it's only once it had gone that I was genuinely able to look this stuff in the eye and to realize what self-love might possibly mean. And the very first time I could ever sit in meditation, you know, because before, of course, there was always a million other things to do. So it's very uncomfortable to sit with yourself when you are not authentic with who you really are. So for me, becoming empowered has meant I'm able to be authentic. That doesn't mean I get everything right. Of course, you know, I'm grateful that I called my website Imperfectly Natural because, you know, I don't get everything right. But it's meant that I can finally step into my power, step into who I'm really meant to be. So it has been literally empowering. And I really do think that sobriety is a superpower. It enables you to be who you're meant to be. And of course, that's different for everyone. But I think for most people, it gives you clarity. It gives you an insight. It gives you back, as you mentioned, that hope, that joy. The word joy is such an interesting one because I don't think I'd used it since I was, I don't know, either a child or in church. I didn't really know what that word meant. It certainly wasn't anything I'd experienced as an adult. That's empowerment for me. It's been amazing.
What I'm loving is that actually the distinction you're making between your inner world, because actually on the outside, everything looked really quite shiny and together and you were successful, because there's often a misconception, isn't there, that problem drinkers, you know, unless you're sat on a park bench and you've lost everything, then there's no need to change anything. But actually on the inside, things weren't great for you at all. And that was absolutely my experience as well. Yeah. And I adore what you say about authenticity. I do think that sobriety has been a massive journey about coming home to who I truly am and honoring that, really knowing who I am and honoring that. And that's actually, you know, deeply where the self-worth comes from, is saying, this is who I am and it's okay to be me, rather than got to try and pretend and got to suppress how I'm feeling or what's going on for me. And like you say, joy, I thought joy was all a bit, you know, joy and hallelujah. It was a thing for people that weren't like me.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think joy now, I mean, it was great to hear Ian talking about ecstatic dance, and maybe he'll talk more about that in a minute. But the joy of being able to be silly and being relaxed, and now having the ability or the power, whatever word you want to use, to be frivolous and to let go, because actually everything was so serious and so scary and so tight and so fearful. I was just so afraid of what other people thought of me. But now I'm like, well, this is who I am, and I can be silly and I can be light and I can be joyful, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, the inner experience is the major change. You know, I mean, when I stopped drinking, I did have quite a flashy looking job in banking. I had a flat that I owned. You know, I had food in the fridge. It certainly, to all intents and purposes, to anyone who didn't know me looking in, a bit like you, it didn't look like, you know, I certainly wasn't on a park bench. Well, not much anyway. Yeah. Ian, do you want to chip in? I'm sure you've got a lot to say on this.
Well, I am the absolute opposite of that, insofar as by the time I found sobriety, everybody knew I needed it. I was falling apart in all directions and had been deteriorating for a few years. But it is worth saying that I was a functioning heroin addict for four of my 7 years. Most people never knew that I was using heroin at all. They assumed that I was using cocaine and stimulants, but that wasn't the case. I kind of got high on heroin. But what I really want to talk about is the point that Janie raised. I love how passionate Janie is with her sobriety, her recovery. For me, it was just like an absolute new lease of life. It was like an opportunity that I could reinvent myself, but I didn't need to reinvent myself. What happened was as I became sober and I found courage and faith in that journey, and I liked what I felt, I became the person that I was destined to be all along. It was like I had distracted my core or my chi or myself from being who I was destined to be by going down getting stuck in my addiction, becoming selfish, self-centered and angry and lonely and hurtful and hateful. And that removed me from who I was meant to be. And getting sober, I was able to rediscover exactly who I was led, who I was born to be in a spiritual way, in a human way. I became the Ian that I was destined to be. And over the years, I've just gone more and more into exploring who I am and being who I want to be, or who I was destined to be, which is why I've been so excited in this past sort of 6-9 months, because I've had this next stage of this journey. And I'm not saying that everyone has to wait 20 years before it happens, but it's just when it's happened for me that now I feel like I not only am I the person that I was destined to be, but I'm really the person that I want to be. And I'm living the life that I believe in. It's almost like a mixture of those ambitions and goals and dreams that I had as a young teenager that were taken from me later on as I got distracted too much by drinking drugs, reopening all of those avenues. So I still feel like I'm living the life of in utopia, like a dreamer, like everything is just going the way that I want it to be. And it's kind of been just one, a result of just one each day at a time, just continuing to do the right thing. My goal on any given day, I was just in a session with a guy, is about being a good guy, not a bad boy. How do I move along a linear line towards being a good guy rather than a bad boy? What's the next best thing I can do to be my authentic self? And that is the power that I believe that we're looking to talk about in this thing. I had lost that power. The drugs had ripped me of that power to be me. My alcoholism stopped me from progressing in any area of my life around who I dreamt of, and who all my dreams and goals and aspirations were just taken away as my life got smaller and smaller and smaller. And I ended up in a squat in West London, unable really to leave the little squat except to go and buy and sell drugs or to go and commit petty crime. And yet I'm not that. I was never born to be that person. And sobriety has gave me, the opportunity to literally write a new book and start my life again. The phrase that is a bit corny is a life beyond my wildest dreams. But it's been beyond anything I could have dreamt of. It's just been this dream that I had when I was a kid, and I get to be that person.
You make it sound so appealing and so fabulous. You really do. And you know what? That was something, even when I very first met you, you already had that incredible joy and magic about you. You've always been someone who's radiated the positive potential that comes with that huge life change. And you know what? I think I felt the same way. I felt like it was the chance to start over. And especially during my late teens and early 20s, before I turned things around, I kept thinking, I wish I could go back to when I was 18 and start again, or I wish I could just go back a couple of years and then I would make these different decisions. And interestingly enough, I've not felt that way at all since I've got sober. I've not really had any regrets, which is really interesting.
I'm a big fan of if you're not happy with what's going on, change it. If you're doing something that isn't giving you pleasure or isn't making you happy or isn't bringing you wealth or making your family happy or isn't contributing to society or making something that towards your legacy, do something about that. Take action. Don't rest on your laurels. Don't sit still, but make changes. Be the change that you want to see in your outside world and within. And I don't know if that comes naturally to people, but it's just a power that drives me to manifest change in myself and those around me. I'm not scared of that.
It actually really resonates with me with what Jamie was saying, which is this permission to become yourself and the permission to honor yourself. I mean, Jamie, do you feel that this is for you, is this incredible new chapter as well, this new possibility of just being the Jamie you were always here to be?
Yeah, I really genuinely do. I do feel that this is the most massive thing that you can ever do. I don't think you can equate it with, I've changed my diet or, you know, I've started a fitness regime. It's something else completely. It underpins everything. And what I really love is the fact that you guys have been sober for years and years and years and years, and it's still a thing. And I love that because, you know, when I got to about, as I was coming up to a year, I had these kind of thoughts. I thought, I wonder whether it might be a bit flat now then. Is that it? Now I've done all the firsts, you know, I've had the first party sober and the first birthday and et cetera. But of course, that's not the reality. The reality is it gets better all the time.
It
really does. You're unwrapping all these other layers. And, you know, once you've kind of gone through the first and you've kind of dealt with all the angst and stuff, you can then start to really get into so many other things. I've got sober club members who, I mean, just to watch them kind of blossom has been absolutely incredible. I feel like a mother hen. You know, I see these women. There's one woman who is, I think she's just almost a year or just over a year sober. And literally the transformation in her in every sense is incredible, both physically and emotionally, and in her kind of in the way she is with other people in her relationships. But also she's gone from being a kind of timid little mouse kind of person who was really genuinely scared of her own shadow to doing a creative writing course and focusing on public speaking and growing her business, and just everything has changed. And that's one of the things I find so magical. People literally find themselves and they get to step into what it is they always wanted to do, or that little goal or dream that they've maybe had since childhood. You can finally get the energy to go after it.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that was certainly true for me, and that I see with lots of people, in fact, probably almost everyone who has changed their drinking, is that we don't realize quite how disempowered we were until you've got some sobriety under your belt, and then you can see the contrast. It's almost like, you know, the boiled frog analogy, that when you're in the thick of it, you don't realize quite how incrementally your power to have the life you want, feel the way you want, have the career, health, relationships, fun, all of that kind of thing has slipped away to the point where it's become pretty dull and grey and awful. And then it's not all of a sudden, is it? It doesn't come back within the first week. In fact, there's a period of real readjustment and it can be a bit hairy. But as time goes on, the sense of what's possible actually gets bigger and bigger. It doesn't get boring at all. It just gets more and more exciting because you realize, well, I have anyway, that I can rely on myself, that I can, or so many different things that now make everything possible. And it really is. Yeah, I mean, you know, Ian and I, we are, I suppose, you know, old timers, as they call us. Well, I don't feel like an old timer. I'm still in my 40s. but it is the foundation from which everything else becomes possible. It really is. And I think that's so important to remember, is that, you know, without that, would all of this stuff, would it all be possible? Would I be a great mum? Would I be able to run a business? Would I be able to have clean hair this morning? Who the hell knows?
I mean, I'm happy to share something. I don't want to hog the conversation, but I mean, in terms of, I find this a really interesting one because I think some people actually are fearful of stopping drinking because they know what they're going to have to look at stuff they don't want to look at, right? You know, because most of us are so, yeah, we're so kind of emotionally immature because we've not had to deal with any of this stuff really, because we've just numbed it out whenever any of it's come up. We really are not used to handling our emotions very, very well. And
I think
so,
that's why for a lot of people drinking was their solution, wasn't it?
Yes,
it's not actually,
yes.
People don't have a drinking problem, they have a drinking solution.
That's exactly,
and
it
when you
exactly
stop, you've got to find a new solution, and that's where kind of digging in and going, right, I will do this work so that, yeah, I don't need a drinking solution.
Yeah, exactly. So I think people are sometimes fearful. I mean, people have actually said to me, clients have actually said to me, you know, if I'm just going to stop for a while, but I, you know, I won't be able to continue to not drink because what will happen when, you know, X occurs in my family or whatever. And so it can seem really, really scary because, you know, you're going to have to see everything. You'll get to see the good and the bad. You know, it's the life in glorious Technicolor, but of course that has the crap there as well. So there definitely is that. And I think some people can also get absolutely blindsided by the enormity of the old stuff and the baggage once yeah, you stop drinking. You know, if it can feel very raw. I mean, what I always recommend is that actually you don't try and deal with that too soon. You can't do it, I don't believe, in the first few months because you're too fragile.
No.
You know, you have to recover first. You really do have to build up your own reserves and you know, really just step into that new identity and get yourself well. You can't start sort of, you know, writing letters of regret and digging into all the old stuff. But eventually you do become so much more resilient. And it's hard to believe when at the beginning, when you feel so raw and so emotional. But over time, I've seen it happen many times. People have, you know, they've taken their time, but eventually they've felt ready to face something really, really difficult in whatever way that is, whether it's needing counseling or therapeutic work or facing a family member, whatever it is, asking for forgiveness. You know, there are many, many things that people need to address. But when they feel ready, they have a different sense of resilience. And again, they come into it with that, from that authentic place and from that place of loving themselves and loving everyone else. There's just more kindness around when people are sober.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make you perfect, but it does make you real. And you know, I've seen it in so many cases. People's relationships have been healed. You know, really awful things that they never ever thought would come about have actually been healed, and they have managed to overcome massive stuff from the past, from this place of being authentic.
Beautiful, Ian.
But there's another side to the paths that block people, in my observation, and just to add rather than to say that there's something different, but there's something as well that I come across, which is people's fear of being bored or being boring. They think that without alcohol or whatever their substances is, that they're suddenly going to be bored in their life. They're not going to be the life and soul of a party anymore, that somehow Saturday night is out. I'm not going to be able to drink on my wedding. I'm not going to have champagne. I'm not going to be able to do this. I'm not going to be that. And that they immediately think of all the great times that they've had on booze and announce that they couldn't possibly dream of living a life without those moments and those features. When the reality often is that, A, those moments were so small and fleeting, and they're simple euphoric memories. So you remember the time when you had a great time on the dance floor and you felt like you were the most beautiful, handsome person in the world. That was one night 16 years ago, and you're still holding on to that memory, despite the fact that last week you were vomiting down your shirt on the same discotheque or whatever it is. People seem to hold on to these memories that were great, and they forget about these dreadful, humiliating moments where they've let themselves down, and they use that in their own mind as an excuse why they're scared to stop drinking in case they never have these moments again. And that's maybe why I'm just so passionate, or why I get so excited about my life in recovery, is because it's been nothing like that. I had many, many humiliating and shameful moments where I let myself down, I let my friends down, I let my family down. I was a DJ, and I used to not turn up to gigs anymore because I was too focused on getting drunk. I watched my whole career just fall apart, and yet my head was telling me, well, I can't stop drinking because I might have to give up DJing again. But yeah, I'd already sabotaged most of that, and yet once I actually took that risk, or I took that leap of faith that, do you know what, anything's going to be better than this now, life has been so much more than the fear of those memories of things I won't do. I can still go out to a rave and dance until the sun comes up in the morning. I work at Glastonbury. I work in the all night fields. And I go to bed about an hour after the field shuts, so about 7:30 in the morning. I can do things today. I can be amongst people drinking, people getting high. I can roll joints for people because I know how to roll a decent joint, and they don't. And all of that is neutralized around me. I don't have to smoke a joint. I don't have to drop an E. I don't have to go on the piss. I am neutral around it all. And yet I get to do exactly the same things as I always wanted to do before, and probably was failing at because I was too drunk to stand up, or too stoned to remember, or too scared to leave my house because I was too busy, holding on to the next line of cocaine. So actually my life got smaller and smaller and smaller in my addiction. And in my recovery, my life has got bigger and bigger and bigger. I like to be like, there's a movie with Jim Carrey where he just says yes to everything. I'm that guy. Opportunity knocks, something falls in front of me, and I go, yes, I'll have a go at that. I don't mind. I am that idiot that jumped out of an aeroplane with a parachute at 18,000 feet because someone said, let's do this. And it was exhilarating, but I'd never do it again. But I'm proud to say that I wasn't scared to do it in the first place. I walked up Mount Kilimanjaro because someone said, let's do this. I said, all right, then. And it was so great. I then had to go back the next year and take 11 of my friends up there just to show them the sunrise. So I'm not scared to take opportunities. But these things I would never have had the courage to do when I was in my addiction. And more importantly, I would have been unable to go anywhere near these achievements because I would have been unable to leave the comfort or the safety of my own house in case I was to run out of booze or drugs. My life and my world just got so small, ages 26, 27, yeah, 28 into 29, that there was no quality to any sort of life. Sobriety gives us that ability to be and do anything that we put our mind to, as long as you don't want to be a drug dealer. That would be foolish.
and that is empowerment. Really is. And that's totally my experience as well. I mean, we were at Glastonbury together. I remember, I think it was 2003. We had a great time.
Yeah.
Just as you say, the amount of things that I've been able to do, and have the best time ever, that I have not been, could never have done before. I think I had a sort of false confidence, but at the beginning of my drinking and drug taking, I had a kind of, it gave me a false bravado. But by the end, there was absolutely none of that. Even sometimes getting from one room to the next room in my damp basement flat in North London was too difficult, let alone all of the incredible things that you shared about, Ian. Yeah, and I think it is important to focus on that it's not just about, working through the painful stuff. It's embracing the incredibleness of life and going for it and just saying yes to new things and seeing where that takes you and coming back to who you really are and finding out who you really are and being willing to take risks. And it doesn't matter if it doesn't work out or it doesn't, I will never go to Glastonbury again. My dad always says the two kinds of fools, those who've never done something and those who've done it more than once. And that's sort of how I feel about Glastonbury. but you know, I still did it. I still was like, yeah, I can do that. I know that I can get through anything. I can try anything, get through anything. And these are the real, real joys, without a doubt, without a doubt. And not only that, just being able to get through, I mean, I've got through some quite difficult things like breast cancer sober, and it's been all right. You know, all the stuff I've learned in my sobriety has actually helped me enormously. And I remember thinking, well, you know, why has this happened to me? Because I live off green smoothies and haven't had a drink in so many, you know, well over a decade and blah, 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 all this sort of stuff. And then someone helpfully pointed out to me, imagine how much worse this might have been if you had, you know, if you were still doing all the old stuff. And I was like, oh, right. Yes. Okay. And I guess that's another thing, the ability to think differently about things, to think in a way that turns me from being a victim to being empowered and to make the most out of situations. Yeah. Yeah. So if for any listeners out there who might be thinking that they're not quite ready to go sober raving or climb Kilimanjaro and they're feeling kind of stuck, what tips would you have? What practical things? Like if you're ever, either of you, in a place where you feel disempowered or stuck or unsure, what do you do that helps you get unstuck and get back to that place or forward to that place of empowerment? Jamie?
I think for me, it's getting out into nature, really. Mm. It makes all the difference. You know, there's something very healing about just being near some trees. Or for me, it's the sea. I absolutely love the sea. Sadly, I don't live near it, which is not great. But I do now, you know, factor in that kind of self-care and literally put it in my diary so that I go regularly, so that I get my kind of fix of the sea. But I think it's a case of finding what your resources are. What is it that allows you to recharge your batteries? And nature does it for a lot of people. But I think find whatever it is and put it in the diary. Most of us are so busy that we spend all of our time doing stuff the whole time, but we don't actually pause and say, well, what do I need to recharge? And I think when you do sort of go off and do whatever recharges you, without your headphones in, without, you know, answering emails, kind of preferably don't even take your phone, you can get back in touch with what's really going on, because there will be a voice that tells you what the right thing is to do. And it's a case of being willing to listen to it. But you can't hear it when you're in the minutiae, when you're constantly answering emails, when you wake up and the very first thing you do is scroll through your phone, when you're constantly on social media or you know, or whatever it is you do with your life. If you can't take 20 minutes out to go and walk by some trees, you're going to find it really difficult to listen to the voice inside you.
Yeah. And I love that. I mean, for me, being out in nature, especially without my phone and with my precious crazy doggo, who is one of the real gifts and joys of sobriety, being able to look after a little creature who adores me. But when I'm out in nature, I'm reminded of the abundance that there is in the world, and that everything is unfolding perfectly, and that everything's been taken care of, and that nature is just doing its thing. And that actually I sometimes don't need to push so hard to try and make things happen. I can just let it unfold as the seasons do. And I'm a huge fan. I mean, I'm lucky. I live in a tiny village in the countryside, and it's really easy for me to go and hug trees or to walk in the forest or any of those things. And it does make a huge difference. And what you just said about self-care, about recharging our batteries. And I often say to people, you know, self-care is a lot more than baths and candles. Although it can sometimes be baths and candles, but it's on the emotional level, the physical level, the spiritual level, the social level. There are many different levels to self-care. And above all else, it's building a life that you don't need to escape from. And that sense of being able to just be with yourself and know that all is well. Ian, what would you say?
Well, I love both of your answers. And I think that for me is part of it. You know, I'm fortunate that I live on the border of a jungle about a kilometer from a gorgeous beach in largely 30 to 35 degree heat every day. I do a lot of hiking. I go running most mornings. I also do Pilates. I've opted against yoga. And I think when you ask the question, what is it that I need to do to bring about a shift when I'm in a place of feeling disempowered, I think about how I stand still and I shake my body. And it's almost a physical movement that shifts me out of that powerless internal state. I think Tony Robbins says it the best, which is that motion changes emotion. So when I move my body, I change my emotional state. And so, by actively or being active in my life, going running or whatever it is every morning, I'm already setting myself up for a day of empowerment. But if I do get to any point in my day where stuff goes down, my head sinks, or I get to a point of despair, I just remember that I can click my fingers and I can start my day again. And that I don't have to stay in that place, but I have the ability to change. I don't have to be depressed if I don't want to be. I can choose to, park that episode, put it to one side, remember to write down what action I'm going to take to resolve it, but then get on with my day and return to a place of fulfillment and joy and maybe have a little dance by myself sometimes. I am constantly surrounded by music. If I don't play my music on my computer, then I put my headphones in. And music is a mood-altering substance for me, or mood-altering thing for me. I'm constantly seeking ways of feeling more and more empowered. But that doesn't mean I don't get down moments, down times, even down days. But I do have the ability to shake myself out of it. So for me, I think it's a physical reaction to that emotional place that shifts me. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, completely. Yeah. Yeah. And I actually even made I'm just coming to the end of teaching another round of one of my signature courses, the Turn Your Inner Critic into an Inner Cheerleader course. And as part of everyone welcoming in their cheerleaders, we've collectively created a playlist, the Inner Cheerleader playlist, which is literally almost 50 really empowering and uplifting songs. And every single one of them, I could just whack it on and have a dance just for 3 minutes is all it takes, and feel fantastic and feel different. And sometimes it doesn't need to be that you have to do something incredibly serious to become empowered. You can put some ABBA on and dance like a loony, or whatever your version of that is. And just moving, not staying stuck. You know, if you're going through a hard time, don't stop, keep going. Come out the other end. Yeah. Well, listen, I think we're coming to the end of our time together. Thank you so much to both of you. I'd love to be able to share with the audience listening how they can stay in touch with you. And I know there'll be some links. For me, I would say come and join my free Facebook group, which is called Harriet's Inner Circle. Ian, how can people stay in touch with you?
I don't know. Ian_sober is my Instagram, or I think my Facebook page, which is Ian Young KPG for Kopan Yang, is my addiction consultancy over here. But I don't know, just Google Ian Young addiction if you need any help, and you'll find me all over the place. I have sober services, and I have a rehab in Phuket called Phuket Addiction Recovery Clinic, which is really good name, the park. And I'm, I'm quite easy to find. Just don't call me as a friend. I'm maxed out a long time ago.
Brilliant. Thank you. And Jamie, how can people stay in touch with you? And also, where can they get your amazing book that you mentioned at the beginning?
Yeah, it's called Happy, Healthy, Sober. You can get it in all the usual places, possibly even bookshops, who knows, but certainly all the usual online stores. And you can find me at thesoberclub.com. That's everything I do is there. And on social media, it's very easy. It's just at Janie Lee Grace.
Amazing. Amazing. Fantastic. Well, I think with that, we'll say it's a wrap. And thanks for listening, everybody, today. This has been the Club Soda podcast with myself, Harriet Whaley-Cohen, my lovely guests, Ian Young and Janie Lee Grace. Have a great day.
Kop Kun Krab.
This podcast is brought to you by Club Soda. You can find out more about what we do on joinclubsoda.com and on our social handles at joinclubsoda.com.